Live from the nation's capital, President Joe Biden and comedian Colin Jost headline the White House Correspondents' Dinner. See all the biggest stars together in one room live April 27th at 8 p.m. on CNN and streaming on Max.
Today on Inside Politics, a judge dismissed some of the charges against Donald Trump in the Georgia election case, including one related to that infamous call where Trump asked Georgia's Secretary of State to find thousands of votes. We're following all of the breaking details from the ruling. Plus, game, set, rematch. Joe Biden and Donald Trump officially clinched their party nominations last night, setting up the longest general election campaign in American history and exposing serious warning signs for both candidates. And TikTok, will Congress shut it down? The House just passed a bill that bans the popular social media app unless the Chinese owner sells it. Xi Jinping's government is now warning the move will, quote, backfire on the U.S. I'm Dana Bash. Let's go behind the headlines and inside politics. First up, the breaking news out of Georgia. A judge in Fulton County just tossed out six of the 41 charges against Donald Trump and his co-defendants in the state's election racketeering case. This as we're standing by for a ruling on whether the DA spearheading the case will remain in charge or be thrown out because of ethics allegations. CNN's Nick Valencia is following all these developments. Nick.
Dana, this is a big win for the defendants in this case, including the former president. This 41-count indictment, six of these charges have now been thrown out. Those charges having to deal with the solicitation of a violation of an oath of office by a public official. The presiding judge in this case, Scott McAfee, saying that the DA's office failed to provide enough details about what the violation would be and the alleged crime would be that these defendants were allegedly soliciting. And this is what he's saying in part of his ruling. Quote, the court's concern is less that the state has failed to allege sufficient conduct of the defendants. In fact, it is alleged in abundance. However, the lack of detail concerning an essential legal element is, in the undersigned's opinion, fatal. We should point out, though, that Judge McAfee did leave the window open for a potential appeal and said that once those details are fixed by the district attorney's office, they can re-indict. But in the immediate, this is being celebrated by Trump's attorney here in this case, Steve Sadow, saying that this is an indication that the entire indictment should be dismissed. Now, we don't want to confuse our viewers here. We are still waiting for Judge McAfee's decision as to whether he's going to remove Fannie Willis from prosecuting this case. He did mention in a recent interview with WSB Radio in Atlanta that he's going to have his decision by the end of this week. It's something that he reiterated to us in a chance encounter earlier. Our supervising producer, Jason Morris, ran into Scott McAfee outside the steps of the courthouse where he did reiterate to CNN that he plans to have a decision on the timeline that he has given himself. Dana.
Okay, Nick, thanks so much for that reporting. Moments ago, we heard here in Washington from Congressman Jamie Raskin, the top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee, who says he's not concerned about the judge's partial dismissal. Rather, listen.
That, to me, is a reflection of the rule of law. I mean, without opining on the specific dismissal, I mean, I don't get upset when Trump's team wins a motion in civil or criminal court. That is the rule of law in the justice system.
I want to bring in former U.S. attorney and CNN legal analyst Michael Moore. Thanks for joining me from Georgia. What's your reaction to the ruling?
Well, I'm glad to be with you. I'm not surprised to see it. I think that the use of a special demurrer, which is really just a challenge to the specificity of an indictment, is a normal defense motion that we expect to see filed. And so this simply is a chance for the court to look to see if the state provided an indictment that was perfect in form and substance. And while that sounds like an impossible task, there are some off ramps that the state can take and some provisions that allow them to move forward. In this case, he simply said, look, you have laid out some allegations about soliciting public officials to violate their oath of office, but you haven't talked about their oath. You haven't talked about the specific violations and how that would impact their oath. I'm going to throw those counts out. The state does have the chance to come back and re-indict if they choose to. But he also, in a footnote, sort of gave a preview of what he's thinking, I think, about timing. And that is, he said, I wouldn't necessarily oppose that the case be immediately appealed to the issue because there's not precedent in this way. That's something that can certainly cause a delay. And I think he's expecting that. So it's a win for the defense team today. Cases like this often die the death of a thousand cuts. And I'm not suggesting that this case is dead or this indictment is going to be dismissed in total. But it's these little right. nicks, these little sort of chops that take the tree down. And we see that at least six of the counts today, while the state has a chance to clean it up, those counts are gone as of right now.
One of those counts, Michael, was related to that infamous phone call on January 2nd, 2021, mm-hmm. when then President Trump called the Secretary of State in Georgia, Brad Raffensperger. Let's listen.
All I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
Just to be clear, there is another charge related to that call that is still standing. But what is your read of the dismissal of one of them? Does it suggest anything about whether that call is the smoking gun that people thought it was when we heard it back, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago almost?
Yeah. Well, I think the case could have been brought on that one count alone, and that is this telephone call, and we'd be well down the road already through with the trial and moving forward. Mm. But the dismissal of this count simply talks about, as it relates to the solicitation of the Secretary of State to commit a violation of his oath of office. Well, I think what the court is looking for is the state to say the Secretary of State's oath is X. It's spelled out in the Constitution. It's spelled out in the statute. One of those provisions is that you have to support and defend the Constitution, both of the United States and the state of Georgia. And clearly, the right of people to vote and to have those votes counted is something that would be under the oath and considered under the oath of fair state. So I feel like they can clean it up if they choose to. But again, this demur, and I don't want people to think this is the end of the case. It certainly is not. Plenty of chances for the state to come back if they want to re-indict. But this demur is a tool that defense attorneys use when you have a complex indictment, you have compound charges under one count of the indictment, complex allegations and compound allegations. And so at least as it related to these, it tells us the judge read very carefully the indictment, considered very carefully the arguments that have been, looked at the specific wordings of the Georgia statute. And that's why we're here today.
Those are, first of all, thank you so much for putting all of that into context and perspective and explaining a lot of what we just saw, because it is detailed and it is complex. Michael, thank you. Good to see you.
Now, good seeing you. Thank you.
Now a turn the page moment. That's how the Biden campaign is describing the president securing the Democratic nomination, effectively so, just hours after former special counsel Robert Hur testified on Capitol Hill about Biden's handling of classified documents. CNN's Jeff Zeleny is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where President Biden will be speaking later today. Jeff.
Well, Dana, the spotlight is shining on Wisconsin, really unlike any other battleground state. Of course, looking ahead to November, because this was a very narrow margin. We think back to 2016 when Donald Trump carried the state by about 23,000 votes or so. 4 years later, Joe Biden won it by about 21,000. But not only that, of course, this is the city where Donald Trump will be renominated. The Republicans are holding their national convention here in July. All of this really boils together to make the state critically important, which is why President Biden is coming here. And the first order of business is trying to get some of those Democrats back on board, easing the concern about his fight for a re-election and trying to drum up some excitement. We caught up with one of those voters, Laverta Martin, who last year expressed some skepticism about Biden running again. This is what she says now.
I just don't think he gets credit simply because he's not as loud and boisterous about what he is doing. We tend to focus on the negative. We tend to think about what's not happening. What we saw with that State of the Union, I am much more confident in his energy level, in his health, in his motivation, and his ability to. He was quite energized, and that energized me to be a little bit more motivated about it.
So the White House certainly hopes that the president's roadshow, if you will, brings some of those Democratic voters back home, back into their campaign. And then they will start working on the independent voters that will indeed swing this election. But Dana, there is no doubt this blue wall that Biden flipped from 2016 to 2020 is so critical to his path in November. So he'll be coming here to Milwaukee later today. He'll be talking about one of his accomplishments, the infrastructure bill, and specifically the granularity of that, expanding the 6th Street corridor not far from where I'm standing here in downtown Milwaukee through some $36 million, making the point that his accomplishments actually help and benefit local citizens. As you know, Dana, a very divided state here in Wisconsin. It will be for the next 8 months to come.
Yeah, no question. You are definitely where it's at, and that's why the president is going there. I think you're going to be there a lot, Jeff. Appreciate it.
You bet.
We have an excellent panel here to discuss all of this and more. Jackie Kucinich of the Boston Globe, CNN's Isaac DeVere, and Leanne Caldwell from the Washington Post. Nice to see all of you. Let's stick on the question of kind of the beginning of the next 8 months. I mean, we kind of said that last week, but now it's mathematically the case that these two men are going to be their party's nominees. Just starting on the Democratic side, the question of coming together and of President Biden getting the coalition, starting to kind of patch it together and bring people who have been frustrated back home. Ilhan Omar was on CNN last night, and I want you to listen to what she told Abby Phillip.
If the election were held today, would you vote for Joe Biden? Can you confirm that he would have your vote today?
Of course. Democracy is on the line. We are facing down fascism. And I personally know what my life felt like, having Trump as the president of this country. And I know what it felt like for my constituents and for people around this country and around the world. We have to do everything that we can to make sure that does not happen to our country again.
I mean, that's a big moment, Leanne, given the fact that she is a member of the famous squad. She is somebody who has been very critical of the president on lots of things, especially these days on the Israel-Gaza war. She also told Abby that she sees significant progress on the Biden administration's approach.
I was not expecting that to be Ilhan Omar's response when Abby asked her that question. I thought that she was going to say that the president has a lot of work to do. So that is absolutely a big moment for the president. And that is also what he needs, not with just people like Ilhan Omar, but people who are like-minded to Ilhan Omar, who have a lot of concerns with the president. But as you can see, the president seems to be listening. You saw in his State of the Union address announcements about Gaza. They're trying to open this humanitarian component there. And so it seems to be the discontent with the president, especially on that issue, seems to be seeping in, and he's heeding their advice.
Isaac, you talk to Biden administration, Biden campaign folks all the time. What should we know about how they're viewing and framing this next phase, as they call it, turning the corner turning the page.
Well, look, the turning the page is after this week, which they knew a lot of these pieces were going to be in where they landed. The State of the Union, they were gearing up for a long time. The way that that speech went, it's always theatrics of the State of the Union. They were prepared for those theatrics. They felt confident that it was going to give him a reboot in a lot of people's minds. You saw that with the voter in Wisconsin that Jeff was talking to. Testimony yesterday, which seems to have really taken the legs out from that report, and the feeling that there were all these big questions with the president's mental state. So now, if you have a president who seems more energetic, who is not senile or whatever her was maybe trying to imply, and they say, look at Donald Trump, look at what he really is and what it would be. That's the crux of what Ilhan Omar was saying. It's not just like, oh, I'm feeling good about Joe Biden. She said, I remember what it was for my life when Donald Trump was president. And that, you know, when it comes to Arab American voters, that's an argument that you will see made of, yes, there is progress on how the president is approaching Israel and Gaza, but also remember the Muslim ban, remember all these things, right? And we'll see if that is more potent now than it was a couple months ago when they were trying that out and Arab Americans were saying, yeah, that doesn't mean anything to us.
So let's look at the other side of the ledger, if you will, to Donald Trump and what some of the results that we saw last night in the primaries, particularly Georgia, tell us any warning sign for him. Nikki Haley got more than 77,000 votes. We were talking just before this about that infamous phone call in Georgia when he was looking for votes. He lost to Joe Biden in Georgia by fewer than 12,000. 77,000, almost 78,000 votes. What kind of red flashing light is that?
What we saw, there were some early votes, but the reporting out of Georgia is that a lot of those were protest votes against the former president. And that is a blinking red light for him. And that's not just in Georgia. We've seen this around the country, that these pockets of support for Nikki Haley, even when it was clear she wasn't going to win, particularly in the suburbs, particularly among women and well-educated voters, that is going to be the hardest thing for the former president to bring those Republicans home, because a lot of those folks probably voted for Biden in the last cycle. And as a result, he is not the president.
Yeah, I mean, you have this sort of the Omar example, which I don't think we can overstate. I think how significant that moment was. I agree with you. And then we have a very different sign on the Republican side. Trump has 8 months to bring those people back into the fold. That's a long time. Everybody stand by. Up next, the House just passed a bill that could ban TikTok because of national security concerns. It now heads to the Senate. China isn't happy. Neither are millions of young people.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. There's been a ton of writing about the album Cowboy Carter since it dropped this spring. But what grabbed my attention is a new documentary on CNN called Call Me Country, Beyoncé and Nashville's Renaissance. Lots of artists have tried to boot scoot their way onto country music charts. Why did this album cause such a stir? And what about both this pop star and this political moment has caused all this conversation? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
TikTok on the clock and the party might stop. Congress took a big step this morning toward banning one of the world's most popular apps. The House overwhelmingly passed a bill requiring that TikTok's Chinese parent company sell it. If they don't, it would be prohibited from app stores in the U.S. Now it goes to the Senate, where there appears to be more opposition to it. Lauren Fox is live on Capitol Hill. I can't stop singing the Kesha song today, which is why we wrote to
it. Sing it for us.
No. I was saying I'm going to do America a favor and not sing. Lauren.
Yeah, Dana, today this vote was overwhelming. The House voting 352-65, 50 Democrats voting no, 15 Republicans voting against it. And those who were supportive of this bill said it came down to national security for them, even as some acknowledged that there were other potential ways to deal with curtailing TikTok's ability to get information on Americans. But there were plenty of members who said that they could not support this, and they warned it could have negative effects for Biden as he tries to pick up young voters on the campaign trail.
I know we're getting plenty of phone calls that young people really love TikTok, and I lift that up. I think that's terrific, but I want to protect them from a foreign adversary collecting their data and manipulating it.
I don't know why you want to upset young people and 170 million people on a platform when there's less restrictive ways of achieving the goal.
The answer is not to go selectively banning the flow of information from a particular nation. The way we defeat China is being more American, not less.
The next question is, where does this go in the United States Senate? Already you have top Republicans and Democrats saying that they want to work to try to get this across the finish line. Mark Warner, Marco Rubio put out a joint statement saying that they are committed to trying and pass this bill. You also, though, are hearing some less than committed work from Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who said that they are going to review this legislation once it comes over from the House. He said nothing else. Dana?
That's very telling. Thank you so much for that reporting, Lauren. Appreciate it. My panel is back. And Jackie, during the break, you were talking about some reporting you have about this massive lobbying campaign that TikTok engaged in, energizing and propelling the people who are on TikTok, users, influencers, to call their congressmen.
Yeah, last week when it was going through the Energy and Commerce Committee, you had this onslaught of TikTok users that were calling their members of Congress, so much so that people had to turn off their phones. And they found that a lot of them were kids who were calling people. And some of the things that they were saying, their reports were kind of disturbing. And it really just sort of, to some of the holdouts who may have not voted for this, it kind of reinforced what they were worried about, which was the influence that TikTok has in this country. And so, in part, it backfired.
That's so interesting. Leanne, you have a story talking about these strange bedfellows that TikTok is bringing together. Let's just look at some of the votes this morning. Those who voted no, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on the Democratic side, Andy Biggs on the Republican side, Ilhan Omar on the Democratic side, Marjorie Taylor Greene on the Republican side, voting yes. More strange bedfellows. Nancy Pelosi and Chip Roy of Texas could not be more opposite in terms of their philosophy, both voting yes. Lauren Boebert and Dan Goldman, also polar opposites, voting yes. Bob Good and Hakeem Jeffries, same.
Yeah, it's one of those issues that brings the left and the right together, this weird coalition, and that's what we saw in this vote today. Now, I spoke to a lot of these people yesterday who were opposed to this legislation. Like Lauren said, they think there's other ways to regulate, not calling out a specific company and not forcing a private divestiture, mm-hmm. and that includes regulating the algorithms that people see on TikTok. Or there's a data privacy to protect people's data, are other ways to do it. But these people who voted against it have concerns, and there are multiple. They say it's a free speech issue. They talk about government overreach. Mm-hmm. And they also say that some of the national security intelligence has not been convincing that there is actual threat mm-hmm. to users, and they just aren't convinced. So there's a wide variety of issues, but it brings the American Conservative Union and the ACLU yeah. together in opposition to this bill.
Yeah. So the threat is about, getting information from your phone. The other part of the threat, this is according to national security officials, is the sort of chaos that China will use TikTok to stir up, not just societal, but as part of that, with elections. Listen to some examples of this from some hearings earlier this week.
The CCP could, again, just like they did here, use TikTok as a platform to influence 2024 elections, right?
We cannot rule out that the CCP could use it, correct?
The different kinds of influence operations you're describing are extraordinarily difficult to detect, which is part of what makes the national security concerns represented by TikTok so significant.
Isaac?
Look, one of the things that happened after October 7th is that people in the White House were monitoring how they felt like there was a lot of pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel content that was being pushed out, and that was China trying to put its finger on the scale. That obviously has an impact on the way people view things. It's not the only reason why things went the way they did, and there's certainly things to be concerned about that are happening in Gaza, despite what the algorithm might say. But when you look at how little things like that and the information that gets pushed into people can have an effect in that way, think about on the scale of the election and
exactly.
how we're going to look at, we'll see videos of things. Maybe they'll be AI generated. Maybe they'll just be accentuating certain things versus other things. That has an influence on how people think, whether they vote, who they vote for, how they feel. Does that drive people to Trump? Does it drive people to Biden? Does it drive people to third-party candidates because they feel disaffected? Do they just stay home? Now, when you see that when China is looking at this election, there's a great article in the Washington Post today about China trying to figure out this question between Trump and Biden, which is better for them. They have an interest.
They
and
do.
This is one way of putting it through.
And just to sort of put a finer point on those really interesting perspectives, people are more and more getting their news from TikTok. And our team put together a really fascinating graph that we can show you. This is based on Pew Research data. Facebook users are getting their news from Facebook, but that is going down. And TikTok users getting their news from that app has gone up from 22% to 43% just in the 3 years between 2020 and 2023.
So the fear of disinformation, particularly from China, is very real. And that's what you've heard from, you know, intelligence agencies. But we'll have to see, you know, whether this is something that it could, because it always can end up being like the next social media, right? So how do you regulate this?
Yeah, well, you mentioned regulating algorithms. I'm definitely not holding my breath on that.
Right.
They've been trying for years.
Not trying at it.
What better place than Congress to try to figure out an algorithm?
I mean, exactly. Thanks, guys. Coming up, one campaign is looking at Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers as a potential running mate. Will he pass? Or are Jets fans going to face even more misery this fall? That's next. My dad will really like that one. The presidential rematch is on, but both President Biden and former President Trump are facing headwinds in their bids to recapture the White House. For President Biden, it's maintaining his 2020 coalition. For President Trump, it's winning back the Republican voters who abandoned him in this year's primaries. And then there are the independent candidates. Joining me to discuss is Democratic pollster Celinda Lake and Republican pollster Ed Goaz. They are co-authors of the book, A Question of Respect About Gulp, Working Together in a Deeply Divided Nation. Here it is. You see it there. Here it is. Nice to see you both. I'm so
nice
glad that you can
you.
Come on. I want to talk with kind of the big picture as we head into the next 8 months. What do you think, based on the data that you have, based on the surveys that you're doing, that voters are really going to care the most about, particularly in these key swing states? I'll start with you.
I think three things. I think they're going to care about the character of the people. And the more that people get exposed, particularly women get exposed to Donald Trump, the less they like him. So he's actually benefited from being off of Twitter and being less in the limelight. And I think this exposure is going to work to Biden's advantage. They're going to care about the economy, and we're fighting hard to get people's perceptions about the economy better, and they are improving, but we got to keep on that. And they're going to care about abortion, and that's going to work in our favor with a lot of key swing
votes. I was waiting to see if you were going to mention that. I was going to ask you that. Now, you think, Ed, that Republicans need to be a bit concerned, your fellow Republicans need to be a bit wary of leaning too far into campaigning on the economy?
I think they have to be careful. I mean, what we have traditionally seen in other campaigns is it takes about 8 months of solid, good economic news coming in before the bulk of the electorate say the economy is doing well. We're already beginning to see some signs of them moving in that direction, and you see the jobs numbers good, you see inflation down some, but more importantly, you see other parts of the economy that's thriving and doing very well. And if that comes to a head in 8 months, it's coming to a head just as the two conventions are going on this summer, which means that the messaging may not be there for Republicans and may be there in a big way for Democrats a month later.
Well, they've been trying to message the Democrats, but people aren't actually feeling it. You think that they would actually, based on your experience, start
to it's going to take till summer before all that kind of sinks in, if it sinks in.
Okay, let's do something I know you all love to do. Look at the crosstabs.
Excellent.
At the demographics and how each, many of them are looking at these two candidates. This is the New York Times, and the question is about whether or not the president's policies have helped you personally. On men, Donald Trump is winning. On women, Donald Trump is winning. White, Donald Trump is winning. Black, Donald Trump is winning. Hispanic, Donald Trump is winning. Interesting. These are registered voters. Now let's look at the question of age. Donald Trump is winning on young people, on 30 to 44, on 45 to 64, and also on 65. What do the margins there tell you? And just the fact that across the board, he seems to be doing well. I mean, it kind of matches up with the head-to-head, which does show, even though it's margin of error, Donald Trump doing better than Joe Biden right now.
Yes, or basically even. The Donald Trump voters are more energized, which is common when you have a primary. But there's nothing like Donald Trump to energize Joe Biden voters. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting about those numbers, though, Dana, I think, is how many people refuse to make a choice. I think both are a problem. And I think the key voting group are going to be the people that dislike both of these candidates. 17 to 21% of the electorate right now, when pushed, they vote for Joe Biden. That's the secret sauce for the election.
Or they could stay home.
Or they could stay home, vote third party.
Mm-hmm. And I get very nervous looking at one poll because into it.
So do we. But we just wanted to give a snapshot.
But if you look at the average, it really since the beginning of the year, that Trump has never had more than a 4-point lead. And at some points, Biden's been up to a 2-point lead. But it's basically 1 point one way or the other within the margin of error. I think you have to take a step back here and say, over 70% of voters wish this was not happening in terms of the two candidates.
Okay, so on that, you both have kind of brought up in your own ways questions of alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He put out a potential running mate list, includes Aaron Rodgers, NFL quarterback, Jesse Ventura, former Minnesota governor, Tulsi Gabbard, former congresswoman, Rand Paul, Kentucky senator. I'm not sure he's so interested, though. Andrew Yang, former presidential candidate, Mike Rowe, Tony Robbins, and Tricia Lindsey. I guess the first question, as we talk about potential running mates, to see if that will sway anybody, are Democrats adequately worried about the RFK factor, and especially if he gets on the ballot in some of these key swing states?
I think so. I think Democrats are very worried about third-party candidates in general because they pull from Joe Biden. What we found, though, is people are reading into RFK the old Kennedy name. And in fact, half the voters confuse him with his father. Democratic primary voters are revealing when they found out that he was an anti-vaxxer, his checkered past on abortion, his choice of running mates, those are not Democrats. I think that his numbers will fall. But it's very formidable, very concerning, particularly among young people.
I think they're going to be a factor in terms of getting the vote higher. But I think what I'm saying with the third party, and I think this is true, whoever kind of comes forward in the next couple of months or weeks, is that what they're doing is bringing out voters. It's pretty much decided they're going to sit at home and not vote anyway.
Interesting.
So it doesn't really change anything. I think the bigger question is those voters, as you mentioned earlier, for example, who voted against Donald Trump in the primary, are they going to stay home or are they going to turn out and vote for Biden? Mm. And that is one of the key questions, as, even more so than third-party candidates.
So interesting. Well, there is no question of the respect between the two of you, Republican and Democrat. Great, great conversation. Please come back.
Thank you.
Learn
for having
so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank
With
you.
Great respect for you.
Oh, thank you.
You.
Bickering and nonsense, that's what one Republican lawmaker told me Congress is all about these days. His parting words, well, one word. Bye.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a team-building getaway to a vacation resort that doesn't sound very relaxing. The annual House GOP retreat starts today, but less than half the conference plans to show up. Some complained about the location. Others are a lot more candid. With tensions inside the GOP running high, they just don't want to spend that much time with one another. My great panel is back. I mean, it's really remarkable how much tension there is inside the House GOP. And before we kick off this conversation, I just want to play for our viewers who might have missed my conversation with Ken Buck. This is as he was making the announcement that surprised his own leadership that he was going to not just retire at the end of the Congress, but he was going to resign at the end of next week. Here's why he said he's doing that.
But a lot of this is personal, and that's the problem. Instead of having decorum, instead of operating in a professional manner, this place has just devolved into this bickering and nonsense and not really doing the job for the American people.
Is it that bad that you're saying I'm done?
It is the worst year of the 9 years and 3 months that I've been in Congress. And having talked to former members, it's the worst year in 40, 50 years to be in Congress.
And I said, do you have anything else to add? He said, bye.
So I haven't seen anything that encapsulates what's going on at the Republican retreat quite as much as what Olivia Beavers from Politico tweeted yesterday. I'd rather sit down with Hannibal Lecter and eat my own liver, said one House Republican when asked if they were attending the House GOP retreat.
Oh, my
Thank
gosh.
You, Olivia, for that. But I think we've seen this throughout the year, right? I mean, there is a tendency to blame Speaker Johnson for not having fostered a lot of unity, but let's not forget how this year started out with all of the Kevin McCarthy drama. Mm-hmm. So, or was that last year?
That was last year.
This Congress, started out with the Kevin McCarthy drama. Mm-hmm. They've never really been able to work as a team here, and we're just seeing it play out with smaller and smaller and smaller numbers at this point, which is harder.
And I just want to underscore, what we're talking about isn't sort of the House. We're talking about Republicans
who
are in charge of the House, and they are really the people who are talking about the liver-eating situation. after Ken Buck leaves next Friday, this is what the breakdown is going to be: 218 Republicans, 213 Democrats for vacancies. So this is just an example of how the tensions are made even worse when it comes to how Mike Johnson, the Speaker, and other members of leadership can manage these guys and women, because they have such a narrow margin, and it's almost non-existent.
It is pretty much non-existent, and that is why Speaker Johnson isn't able to manage these guys. He has a leader with little experience leading, but he is lost control of the majority. He's not able to pass anything with Republican votes. Now they have to, suspend the rules, everything, even messaging bills that are supposed to be good and easy for Republicans can't pass unless it involves Democratic votes. And so it is, you have the faction of the party who is mad at people for ousting Kevin McCarthy. You have the people who have no relationship with Mike Johnson. Mm-hmm. You have someone like Patrick McHenry, who has been in Congress for a long time, and he is ready to burn it all down on his way out as well. And he's very much lately had been a member of the establishment.
I mean, I could see watching this and saying, well, is that so bad that because the majority is so narrow, they have to work together in a bipartisan way? I mean, TikTok, that happened this morning. I mean, we've never seen anything like that, or we haven't seen anything like that in recent times. But that is definitely the exception, not the rule. And Isaac, I just want you to look at this graph, which shows you how little the House Republican majority has gotten done when it comes to bills into law. Only 27 in the first year of this session. 27. That is the lowest by far in almost 30 years. Three times lower than the next highest. And I think that includes like post offices.
It does.
Yeah.
This is a hard argument to make for more time in the majority for the Republicans, which is the argument they're going to be making going into the fall. And it's something that members of the Republican conference are saying. Chip Roy, who is a very conservative member of the House from Texas, over and over has said, we're not getting anything done. What are we doing here? What is this? And look, when you see these retirements, Ken Buck, but Democrats sometimes spin it as, the Republicans know they're going to lose the majority. They don't want to live in the minority. They clearly don't want to be here no matter what at this point, because they're getting so little done. And it's not like there aren't big things to get done. Yes, the TikTok bill passed, but what about the immigration bill, which is a bipartisan bill,
Ukraine.
Right? Couldn't get a vote. Ukraine funding, Israel funding, government funding.
Oh, that.
Big things. And we were talking about this during the break. After next week, they're about to go home for 2 weeks on recess.
Well, they've been working really hard.
Really. And yeah. But with this kind of margin, it's a question of what's even the point of coming back.
We got to take a break. Thanks, guys. Great conversation. Mm-hmm. Up next, Steph Curry for president. What the Golden State Warrior star said about a career in politics. Four-time NBA champion Steph Curry is considering his future after basketball. The 35-year-old told CBS he could be open to a future in politics when his playing days are over.
Steph Curry for president.
Thank y'all for welcoming us here.
Yay, nay, maybe.
Maybe.
Do you have an interest in politics?
I have an interest in leveraging every part of my influence for good in the way that I can, so if that's the way to do it, then I'm not saying the presidency, but if politics is a way that you can create meaningful change, or if there's another way outside of politics, you know, that we can do.
You're not ruling it out?
No.
2028, you never
not
know.
Not that soon.
Not that soon, okay.
Not that soon. Okay, thank you so much for joining Inside Politics. CNN News Central starts after the break.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.